Welcome back to Autism, A New Perspective, the podcast show where we help you understand what is going on in the mind of your child. And we always encourage you that growth for your child is possible. I'm Kat Lee, and in this week's podcast, Dr. Gutstein talks to us about autism in 2026. Let's listen in.
There hasn't been much improvement. The autism literature, when you think about medical issues, you think about the advance in medicine, and we expect to see things improving and success rates improving, knowledge and understanding of a condition improving. If you think about things like heart disease, diabetes, cancer, you know, you just expect to see that we're going to be clearer and understand it more and be more effective in how we're addressing it. And, you know, the thing about all those illnesses or disabilities or problems is that there's something at the core that unites people. I mean, what is the illness or what is the problem? And then there's different ways that people manifest it. There's different other issues that people have. For instance, people with diabetes can have heart problems and obesity and all kinds of different issues. And so we have to be able to distinguish between sort of lists of symptoms or lists of issues that people have when they come in and something, what is at the core? What is the underlying issue that defines this diagnosis of autism? It's interesting that we still don't, if you read the literature, autism is still being defined as a list of symptoms. And people with autism are being seen as this diverse group where no one understands anything about what is uniting that group of people. You know, there's a lot of issues around autism advocacy and a lot of issues around, you know, a lot of discussion around that. But we still don't have a consensus in the autism community about what autism is, except for a little checklist of symptoms, right? And yet, you know, if you read what we're doing, or if you understand what we're doing, we do have a sense of the underlying commonality. You know, as I've always said, there's a commonality of autism, and then there's a diversity, just like anything else, of different issues that people have to deal with in their lives, and children have to deal with, ranging from nutritional issues and gut issues, allergies, ADHD, whatever, that they can also have. Autism doesn't protect you from other issues, right? In fact, it probably increases your vulnerability. But so there has to be a very individualized approach, but there also has to be an understanding of what unites people with autism. And I'd love to see, my dream would be in the autism community, there finally is an understanding of what the common features, what the common underlying issue is in autism. And we've been talking about that for a number of years, being the failure to develop dynamic intelligence because of the inability to develop the experience guiding relationship, right? And there's a ton of research that I've put together that supports that. We're just not getting it out. We're not getting it into the community, into the larger community more clearly. And I'd love to find a way to train our own people to communicate that more effectively, whether that's to developmental pediatricians, child psychiatrists, teachers, parents, you know, advocacy groups, so that they understand that we're not at all, you know, that we have to look at autism in this two-layered approach, right? We have to look at each child as a unique individual with their own strengths, their own vulnerabilities, but we also have to look at each person who has this diagnosis as having this fundamental issue, fundamental problem that has to be addressed if they're going to thrive in the world, right?
Actually, when you said to thrive in the world, and I was thinking about all the children, now adults, that we're seeing, that's our concern, our sadness, even when we see they've been through so many therapies and so many interventions and they're not thriving, it feels you have this wonderful process that we have that can help them thrive. And yet that word just really struck me, that we're seeing an awful lot of young people who are not thriving.
Well, yeah, because we're not, and you know, I do continue to stay up to date with the research and the literature, and it's off on all these tangents. The research that's being published is on, you know, people trying to get master's theses and dissertations, or I don't know, tenure or whatever, but they're not interested in trying to really understand where we're going. Now, you know, it's interesting that there was a period where researchers were really looking and trying to find what is the core underlying issue, and they went on to some areas that didn't really pan out, things like theory of mind or executive functioning, and they had other ideas, you know, global, local and global issues, but there was at least an attempt. Now, you know, that those were shown to be sort of not really effective ways of looking at this entire population, but there was an attempt to try to look and say what is, and there are other people who, you know, central coherence, that was another way of looking at, and I applaud people for at least trying to do that, as misguided as the directions were, they at least made some attempt to say what is it that is underneath here. Why do these people all have, why do we use the term autism? Why don't we just say they have this problem, this problem? Why do we need that diagnostic label? Some people argue we don't. But again, we would argue, yes, you do, because what we know, and interestingly enough, you know, we know it from the infant research, we know it from the adult research, we know it from both ends, right? And children. To study that the basis for developing what we call dynamic intelligence, which are the abilities and motivations to be able to thrive in a complex dynamic environment, right, do not develop, universally do not develop in people with autism. Now, they may not develop in other people as well, but some of those degrees, but we see that from very early on, the foundations of dynamic intelligence do not develop because the experience-guiding relationship does not form. And you know, we do we have a very unified then sense of what unites everyone with this disorder. So I'd like to see that in the year that we are all clear about that, and we're all clear about ways of communicating that. And again, you know, position of being able to look at these things from two different positions. One is the diversity of each individual. One is the other is the united, right, the underlying factors, the failure to develop dynamic intelligence, which has to be addressed in each person who has this diagnosis. And also that this is a way to make a diagnosis too. This is a way to be able to assess and say, this is what we're calling autism.
So, as a parent for 2026, I'll tell you of course, I totally agree with you, but my other is just that parents, I don't know how to say it, but don't lose, or maybe I should say gain, the understanding you have been talking about for years, which is they are the best guides for their children. If you go around just our area where we live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, there is now a clinic. I don't want to hyperbolize, but on many corners to send your child. It is just boomed as a business, we'll say. I hate to say it that way, but in terms of what, you know, there's this clinic, that clinic. And for me, when I start talking to parents, they are like, well, that's where I think I'm supposed to send them from 9 to 5 or 8 to 5. And that's our model, was that when you are the best guides, and if you're not able to have time, of course, people work and we know that. But if you don't think you are sufficient in terms of when you are with your child, then that's not true. And I hope that we can get that message out more and more, because I'm really concerned about that even more than I used to be,
Really, yeah.
because of this explosion of services. I'm just going to kind of generically say services that are available.
Well, I think, you know, it's interesting. I think it's true in other areas too of service delivery that, you know, people expect somehow are not relying as much on family, on their own efforts as well, and they want the professionals to come and fix things. It sounds pretty good to me. I want the professionals to come and fix the problems that you have. In some respects, in some areas, maybe that's something the professionals can do. There's a big difference between, that. But the key is, I think the role of the professional needs to be to help you figure out what you're going to do at home during the day. I've been going to physical therapy for a long time, and I see a bunch of people who come to the physical therapist, and they go to the one or two sessions a week, and they expect that that's going to be the treatment, right? They don't do the work at home, and they don't get better, and they're shocked that they don't get better, or they bring their child to the physical therapist, or they bring it's the same thing. And there's some therapists who seem to be okay with that because it's can be very lucrative to say, oh, come in more times a week, right? And we'll make even more money. But the truth is, the people who get better are the people who then both the therapist and the patients who work together to figure out, what am I going to do when I leave that therapist's office? What am I going to do when I go home? How am I going to use, what are they teaching me to do with my body and my mind to be able to rehabilitate, to be able to work on this during the time I'm away? Now, when I go to the dentist, I don't expect the dentist to tell me, other than brush my teeth and floss, what to do at home. There are some areas, like when you go to a surgeon, you expect, well, actually, that's not a good example because rehab is really critical for any kind of surgery. But there are times when you expect the therapist to deliver the service. I'll give you an example. I had some excruciating neck pain that's been the last few weeks, and I do my rehab for physical therapy, for 2 hours every day. So I'm a dedicated person at home, but that wasn't helping my neck pain. And I went to my physical therapist, and she was able to locate a spot on my neck, and through dry needling was able to help it. And I wasn't going to stick a needle on my neck when I got home. That was not what I was going to do. I'm doing the long-term rehab. That was a very acute, thing that was bothering me at that point. And she was able to give me some relief, which was really great. But at the same time, I have to continue to do all my back stuff and all my other rehab exercises that if I just go to physical therapy, it's just a waste of time. But I think we have, in autism, for some strange reason, we've gotten into the model. I know why it is. Started out with the behaviorist saying, just give us the kids and we'll fix them. And, you don't have to, well, you don't have to do it at home because you don't know what to do at home. And the idea that as you say, sometimes we'll spend hours and hours with those kids. And I think that's what you're saying too. And we'll do the rehab. And it is a problem because the parents then are inadequate. They don't know what to do. That most important relationship is not being utilized, right? And the number of hours and days and months, which could be used, could be important, it could be critical, are wasted. The other problem is the therapists don't know what they're doing. I mean, it's not just that they're taking away the parent advocacy, is that they're just reinforcing static intelligence, static behaviors, and many cases making things worse, in terms of neural development, developing the brain. They're not developing the brain as a complex dynamic entity. So even if they were surrogates for the parents and taking over the parents' place, which I don't agree to, at least it would be nice if they were trying to do the right things. But they're not trained to understand autism. They don't read the research. They don't know what they're dealing with. They're trained to deliver a certain product that doesn't have any effectiveness, and as I said, can make things worse. And there's no controls over, you mentioned these clinics. There's really no control over their effectiveness or what they're delivering. It's one of the sad things, and that they talk about a paradigm change, is there's no accountability in terms of what you're even trying to achieve, and how that's going to relate to anything in the future, any long-term outcome. So these people can operate and deliver, quote, as you say, services that don't have any, there's no reason to believe they're going to be helpful. I don't want to fight that battle because it's too difficult for any of us to do. I think we want to provide an alternative model that says, look, for understand RDI, to understand what we're trying to do, you have to know what the long-term issue is. You have to understand that the goal is for this person to be able to thrive in a complex dynamic world. And if they don't develop these abilities, they're not going to be able to do that. And that these other models, these other clinics don't even try to address those areas. They're not even doing that. But it gets a fundamentally, to me, it gets back to understanding if you're not going to choose them, you have to know why. You have to know what is autism? What is it? What is this thing? And parents, unfortunately, don't even get that information. They get a list of symptoms, right? Autism is blah, 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 blah. And so we'll go to a clinic where they deal with the symptoms, but not the underlying cause, not the underlying issue. I do think that's, to me, what I'd like to be able to do is if we're going to change that, the clinics, as you say, popping up and all the things that are happening like that. That we have to be able to educate, we have to create a paradigm and educate people to understand what it is that we're dealing with. And it sounds so ridiculous to even have to say that after all these years, but it's true. If you knew what, if you were a consumer, okay, if you were a good consumer, you'd go in and say, how is this going to help my child develop the ability to function in the real world? And you'd have something to say, how are you going to address this, 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 and show me the results. Show me, how you do it. But people don't even get educated. When they get a diagnosis for their child, they don't get any information about that, right? They don't get any sense of what is it they're trying to remediate. What is it about the future? They don't get told about they don't even get told about the prognosis. By the way, and they don't get told that there is no success rate in the treatments because they don't even study the success rate. That all these clinics popping up have no reason. There's no reason to think that they're going to be helpful because they don't bother studying anything that they do over the long term.
As we're kind of closing out the year together, or actually we're actually as we introduce the new year with each other, I want to thank you for being tireless and reminding us of how important research is, how important it is to ask the right questions, how important it is to understand our role as parents, and how important it is to understand our role as professionals, because you are have been the voice of that for 30 years, and I want you to know how much I appreciate you.
Thanks for joining us for ASD, A New Perspective, a podcast show where we help you understand the mind of your child. And we always encourage you that growth for your child is possible. I'm Kat Lee. See you next time.